Seriously Sinister discusses true petty crimes that may be disturbing to some.
Or could be easy listening to all of you psychopaths out there.
Names and places have been changed to protect the hosts legally.
Listener discretion is not advised.
Welcome to Seriously Sinister, your high school sister's secret 30-year-old boyfriend. This is Trevin.
Excuse me, Trevin. And this is Amanda.
You know, we've all been there, right?
I guess not.
I think it's a common thing for some people.
Okay. We'll all agree.
Yeah, agree to disagree, I guess.
So how are you, Trevin? Anything dreadful for us this week?
You know, I'm dodging things dreadful left and right, but I've got one particular one.
Okay.
So I got a new puppy.
I know. She's right by me.
Yeah, she's chilling with us right now. She is a almost 3-year-old Sheltie. She's about 15 pounds. We have announced her online already, so our Instagram crowd will have already known for a couple weeks. But
yeah,
to go along with her, I'm having some issues with Boots.
Yeah.
He is making my life hell with her. So just to tell everybody, we weren't going to get a dog quite yet. We were going to get a dog when we got in the house, and Mabel is her name. Mabel popped up, and we thought, we'll just try to get her. I doubt we'll actually get her because a lot of people were applying, and we accidentally won. Well, I'm not mad about it. She's like the perfect dog. She's well behaved. She's quiet. She's little. She's everything I wanted.
Yeah.
But Boots is a big, giant bully. And it's not just a cat who, like, a sweet little puppy comes up and is like sniffing, and then the cat gets annoyed and slaps the dog. Mabel respects Boots, does not want to have anything to do with him. She fears him. She will cower in the corner of the room to get away from him. And he just watches and waits. And anytime either Emily or I are not that close to her, then Boots will charge at her and just ferociously attack her.
Yeah.
It's not playful. I mean, Boots is the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
But when
I know
it comes
he's usually
to dogs,
so chill.
He is an absolute terror. And she is usually always shaking and scared in the house.
Aww.
Anytime Boots walks by, she hides her face and looks away. It's heartbreaking because I wanted to have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And if Boots cannot adjust to this and make it work, literally no dog on earth is going to work, because
right,
this is the perfect dog for what we have or what we need.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, she is so sweet. She's, like I said, I've only heard her bark once since she's been over here. She just likes to cuddle and sleep. She looks like a miniature version of my dog, Reptar, so I obviously am in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I still have hope for you guys, and I still have faith in Boots. I still think he'll come around. I know that, like, bringing a dog in with a cat already there first, I've never experienced that. It's always been the other way around,
mm-hmm,
where we've brought in a cat into a situation where we already have a dog, but I have faith. I have faith that time will heal all wounds.
Mm.
Do you think it's just because he's like your first cat?
No, I don't think so. I think Boots might have had a troublesome past with dogs or something. Back
okay,
when I lived with the boys, anytime somebody would bring a dog over, he would do that with them too. And I knew that bringing her in here, I just figured that maybe after a day of chilling, it would be okay. But it looks like it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah, it'll probably at least take a few weeks, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, it took a while even for Reptar to like Yoshi.
Really?
Yeah, he's not really one to go and attack, but he would just ignore her or like push her off the couch sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And she would lay down to cuddle with him, and he'd just stand right up and walk away. It took a while. And now they cuddle, and they're chill. And
yeah, they're like a bonded pair.
Yeah, and Arlo, it was a little rough adjustment period there, too, where he was hissing, and they were all up in his business. But over time, it got better. You know, everyone just has to find their boundaries.
Yeah, I hope that's how it works because, man, I
see
how
she's perfection.
She's great. And I mean, we took her to a 4 or 5 year old's birthday party yesterday. She handled all these screaming kids like a champ.
Yeah.
She handled your dogs pretty well. Your dog's watching her for me right now.
Yeah.
And she came up to me with her tail wagging and stuff. And it's like, that doesn't happen at my house because she's too scared to freely walk around.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, man, I hope I'm not like ruining her life by being her owner when it seems like she can make literally any other situation work.
No, you're not ruining her life. You and Emily are such good, caring, loving animal people, and you'll figure out a way. I still have hope. God, she's so cute, though. She's just sleeping right by us right now.
Yeah, I keep looking over at her.
Well, maybe one of our listeners will have some good tips for us, because I know when I've shared my dreadful dilemmas, I've had listeners DM me and give me some tips. So if anyone knows how to make a cat that's been there years and years fall in love with a new dog, let us know.
Yeah, what have you done? I've tried a bunch of different things so far, and I understand time is going to be the main thing. But
yeah, and probably not punishing Boots,
punching
but
boots.
Like but like if he, you know, if he attacks her, just immediately being like, look, if you do this, this is the consequence, and you're not gonna like this consequence.
Yeah, I put him in timeout.
Yeah, like I don't know what works for him in particular. If it's like, okay, every time you attack her, we're putting you in the bathroom, or
yep.
I know Arlo doesn't like water. I don't know, different things, but I think it'll be okay.
I hope so. Plus, I'm sure having just the bigger house will help, too, because right now we're sharing 2 rooms.
For sure. For sure. And she can have the backyard, and yeah.
Yeah. Plus, she's been in the house, and she keeps visiting the house, so by the time we sit in the cats in there, they're not going to be
like, she's going to be like, I know where I'm going.
So she'll have the upper hand in that department, at least.
Oh, man. Well, I also have a dreadful dilemma this week.
Drop it. Drop it for me.
My dreadful dilemma is that I did not win the Powerball.
Oh, no. Did you actually play?
I did. Oh. I did. Jordan got 2 tickets. It's so funny because we're definitely those kind of people that we always talk about what we would do if we won, or, you know, we're always disappointed when we don't win, but we don't buy tickets usually. So it's really stupid. But he actually bought tickets, and I was like, you know what? Maybe. I mean, why not us?
You
right?
get that weird sense of hope.
Yeah, I'm like, it could happen. It happens to someone. But yeah, obviously we didn't win. And it would just be really cool. Not even it winning the whole thing, but just winning like something, like a little piece of it.
Yeah.
Have you ever won any sort of big lottery scratch ticket or anything like that?
The most I've won on a scratch ticket, I think, was like 125, I think.
Wait, 125?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
not $1.25.
I thought you meant $1.25. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, okay. Very specific total.
Well, that is actually pretty high to win.
I used to work at a gas station. It seems like when you have a job and you hang out at that job, you kind of buy the product of that job more just because you see stuff all the time. Like if I were at Dollar General, I'd probably be like, oh, this weird Easter ornament looks great in this month of August for some reason. But and you just like buy it for some reason on a whim. But yeah, I saw so many people with scratcher ticket addictions.
I was wondering.
And it kind of just rubs off on you and you're like, man, I hate my job and I'm bored here. It's illegal to like sell it to yourself, but I would go around the counter and buy it from whoever I was working from.
Oh, it's illegal to sell them to yourself. Even the scratch tickets?
Well, it's still lottery.
Yeah, I guess. But it's not like you really know any intel on it, you know?
They could try to. If I won something huge, I would probably get, they'd probably watch cameras and just see.
Yeah.
They would look really closely into it, even if it is foolproof. They
Weird.
Would still say, there's some way you're cheating.
That's odd. So what would you do if you won the lottery?
Oh, man.
I'm just curious.
I would have a separate building for my audio stuff, probably. I'd probably get a whole different house right after getting this one, just to have something big and stupid.
Right.
But, oh, well, you know what I would do? I would get a big projector movie theater screen, like a room that could hold that. When we went to go bed shopping at Nebraska Furniture Mart, they had, and I had never seen anything like this, but it was like a really fancy projector, but it was just like a screen that you put on the wall that looked kind of like a movie theater screen. I think it was 100 inches or something. And they had these awesome wireless speakers that just stuck on the wall to the sides of the screen.
Oh.
And it looks so just official, and I wanted it so bad. I think it cost, it was like $3,000 for the projector. Ooh. It was like, it was going to be about $6,000 altogether for all the pieces.
Wow.
And I told Emily, I said, that's the next goal.
Oh, man.
And I can get it, and I will get it one day.
That would be living right there.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if my living room could handle it, but I would try.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would obviously, if I won, just pay off all my, obviously, all my debts and all my bills and everything. And then it would be really weird if I won, because I'm a very... oh gosh, what's the word? Thrifty kind of person. I don't like to spend really large amounts of money unless it's like an experience. Mm-hmm. So I would probably go on like really cool trips and help pay off my family stuff. And then, I mean, I'd probably do something home-wise and mm-hmm. car-wise, maybe fix up our bus or something.
Yeah.
But I don't really know.
I wouldn't blow it all. I would definitely keep so much. I would just want to live comfortably and not have to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And I would probably want to put it into something that could keep making money too. Like, I don't know, build a parking garage and then, I mean, that seems like a pretty low maintenance situation.
I would think so.
And then just collect all the ticket money or whatever mm-hmm. forever. I don't know. I would do something where it was like easy work that could keep...
sustainable.
Yeah. I'd want to do something. Jordan now, on the other hand, he would be the one that would want to buy all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, man, let's do something amazing, like a once in a lifetime experience kind of thing. But
yeah, I would buy things that I really wanted, but I wouldn't buy the best of things I didn't care that much about. Like, I think there's probably people who work factory jobs who are in debt right now who blow more money on shit they don't need than I probably would if I was a millionaire.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh, my goodness. Well, do you want to transition over to some trivia?
Yes.
Whoa, Trevin, we do not have the rights to say that.
Let's have a fun time.
As you can see, I didn't try to do a funny line with that. I just let the music do its thing. Okay, so we are doing trivia, and I've got one for you. It's about a serial killer of sorts.
For the past, two now trivias, I've gotten it right? Or did I just get the last one wrong?
I'm pretty sure we both got last one wrong.
That's right. Okay. I'm going to try really hard to get this one right.
Okay. What was Jeffrey Dahmer's job at the time of all of his killings? Is it A, a butcher, B, a school janitor, or C, a chocolate factory?
Oh my gosh, I don't know this one actually, because Jeffrey Dahmer really freaks me the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think butcher, I think that's going to be too obvious. What was the second one?
Not school janitor.
I'm going to go with that one. I'm going to go with B.
Okay. And you are incorrect.
Damn! Was it Chocolate Factory?
Jeffrey and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh my God. What chocolate factory was it?
From 1989 to just before he was arrested in 1992, he worked at Ambrosia Chocolate Factory.
Weird.
I should have wrote down where that was at. But he was fired for chronic absenteeism, which, I mean, if you're off killing people,
I mean,
you're going to miss some work, I imagine.
I would say so. I would say that living a creepy double life probably makes it a little inconvenient for working and getting there on time.
I would say so.
Ew, that guy's such a freaking weirdo.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to know what their products are. Maybe we've bought something from Ambrosia. I mean, I don't know if Ambrosia's still around. That was late 80s, early 90s.
I know. I'm like, Ambrosia chocolate. I wonder. I'm going to have to do some research now. Yeah. I'm very curious.
Maybe Wonka bought Ambrosia out or something.
I don't know. I wonder how Ambrosia felt after that all came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder if it affected their business.
Yeah, I wonder about that too. Because, like, you want to be an equal opportunity employer, but then you look back and you're like, oops, I hired a serial killer.
Yeah, and not only a serial killer, but, like, one that ingested human people. And, like, you have a food company.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I feel like it probably hurt their business, but now I want to look into that more.
I would think so. Unless you were really scared, then I would just pull a 180 and I would make a candy line based off Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh my God.
And then you get the weird people going out of their way to get it.
Right. There would be too.
I mean, I would probably be one of them.
Okay, well, are you ready for my question this week?
Yeah, bring it.
Okay, so this was a new article, but you know, with like statistics, it takes a few years to actually have the accuracy of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is according to the statistics gathered from 2017 by the FBI.
Oh.
If you are murdered in the United States, there is a blank percent chance that your murder will get away with it. A, a 30% chance. B, a 40% chance. C, a 50% chance.
And I feel like, oh wait, it's the percentage chance that they do get away with it.
Yes.
I'm going to go with the highest and say it's a 50% chance they get away with it.
It's 40.
Damn, okay.
It's B. But, I mean, I picked them like very close together mm-hmm. for my options. But there is a 40% chance that if you are murdered in the U.S. that your murderer will get away with it scot-free. Is that the phrase scot-free or scotch-free?
Scot-free unless it's in Mad Men. And then they're drinking scotch.
Oh, well, okay.
No, I believe it's scot-free.
Okay. But yeah, 40% chance. I mean, I don't really like those odds.
I don't either. You know, people always talk about, oh, well, we're tracked and the government's listening to everything. And it's like, well, if they're listening, they're doing a really shitty job of keeping track of a lot of this stuff.
I know. I mean, your freaking phone tracks you 24/7. Mm-hmm. I mean, you start talking about a shoe and then you see it everywhere online, you know? So it's like, get over yourselves. But yeah, you would think that a developed country with technology, with DNA, with everything.
CCTV.
Like that it would be higher. But I have read a lot of articles that have said actually right now, it's actually worse chances of your murderer being caught than it was back in the day. Which I don't know if it's because crime has gone up or population or what it is, or maybe because there's all this stuff going on with the police. I don't know what it is.
I feel like population plays a good part in that.
Right, huh. Right. But I'm just like, damn, that makes me feel very uneasy. So there you go, everyone. Yeah. Feel uneasy with me.
Sleep well.
Sleep well tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But yeah, that one really creeped me out. And yeah. And it was statistics, like the FBI said it. And I'm like, why are you guys saying this stuff?
Yeah, they're telling on themselves. That's just like me saying, I work an 8-hour job, but guess what? I only actually do 3 hours worth of work.
Right. They're like, hey, you know that job we're supposed to do? Yeah, we only do it about 60% correctly. Yeah,
I spent my time doing the statistics on how much I'm failing at my job. So
oh my God.
Pat on the back for that great math.
And it's a very unsettling thing, but mm-hmm. with all the unsolved cases you hear about, it kind of makes sense, but it doesn't make me feel any better about it.
No, it does not.
Well, after that lovely trivia, Jeffrey Dahmer and murderers, is it story time, Trevin?
It is story time. It is the time to drop some stories. So we've been talking about it, and I have not done one for quite a while. We're going personal today for me.
Yes. I know you've started some stories with little snippets of your personal life, like the poop password one was a personal favorite of mine. But I've been ready. I've been waiting for like a full personal Trevin story.
This is one that it was from my childhood, kind of, early teens, and yeah, it's got to do with my family. It's pretty interesting.
Oh, wow. Can't wait.
Yeah, so I guess that will be all the preamble I need, and we will just get into questions afterwards.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. There's always that one person from our childhood that gave us the creeps. This could be a grandpa that loved to show off his half-missing finger. An aunt that scolded you a little too hard one time? Or a weird uncle that would follow you around, talking in a Donald Duck voice? Chances are, none of these people meant any harm towards you, and they would feel awful if they knew they were scaring you with how they acted. But that doesn't change the fact that they did scar part of your childhood. Children tend to grab onto small details or occurrences and never really let them go. What could be a life-defining quote for you from your father could have just been some random thing that he meant nothing by. I've had many things like this, where I have had vivid memories of these situations, and my parents just don't believe they ever said it. It's enough to make you really question how you've chosen to view your own life. This story, however, is not about one of those misunderstood figures of the past. Sometimes, the irrational moral compass of a child can be spot on, even if they don't have the power to follow their gut. This story is about one of the biggest villains of my childhood, whether he knew it or not. For any of our regular listeners, it may come as a surprise that I was raised on a farm. Through my many struggles of becoming a man, I had every opportunity to really grow into a rugged outdoorsman. I lived on a large 80-acre plot of land with rolling hills, a creek on the south side, and a herd of cattle. There was always a fence needing to be fixed, a tractor breaking down, or some other farm-maintaining chore just waiting to be accomplished. However, I just wanted to stay inside, draw pictures, watch movies, or play video games. The only time I really liked going outside was to see all of my cats. As I did live in the country, my parents never had a limit on how many cats I could have, as long as they were outside. I took full advantage of this technicality. This 80-acre plot of land housed three families. First was my Meemaw. Her and my grandpa had lived there since the 70s, until my grandpa passed in the mid-90s. Just a short walk down from there was my family's house. And then around the corner, on the other side of the South Side Creek, was my Aunt Shelley's trailer. My Aunt Shelley's living situation was a very interesting one that I, still to this day, don't fully understand. We called her Aunt Shelley because she was my Meemaw's sister, so technically, she was my father's aunt. Her and her husband, Cal, had fell on hard times, and my grandpa had told them that they could live on the land until they get back on their feet. As most of these stories go, the hard financial times were self-inflicted, and they were just looking for an easy place to stay. They ended up moving a tiny mobile home onto their corner of the land and stayed there indefinitely. After my grandpa had died, they just continued living there, acting as if they were entitled to the land. My Aunt Shelley and Cal had two adopted grandchildren from their son that they took care of. I would sometimes play with them, but I always had a weird feeling about Cal. Cal was a very intimidating man with a horseshoe receding hairline and was rarely seen wearing a shirt. I would always keep a comfortable distance from him until one day I had double bounced their grandson on their trampoline and he pulled me off to give me one of the hardest spankings of my life. I think my dad had already had a weird relationship with Cal, but this did not help with things. Cal was one of those men who, I can tell now, was pretty weak, but did his best to keep a strong presence. My Aunt Shelley could not do anything without his permission first, and that went double for the children. I never knew of either him or my aunt having a job, yet they always had some of the most interesting stuff. Their home was on the corner of a gravel road, just before it drove over a creek. Shrouded in a little patch of woods, they lived in an old, decrepit camper trailer that was no longer mobile. Cal had eventually built a very rickety old back porch onto the trailer. Surrounding this trailer was so much junk, from random barrels to broken chairs, and one weird children's car designed and painted to look like a bear wearing overalls. They had taken this borrowed space of land and turned it into an absolute dump. Imagine your kitchen after a messy family member spends a weekend at your house, but at a much grander scale. Their grandchildren had always told me that they spent their weekends at a swappin' shop, where their grandpa would get all of this stuff. Even at a young age, I had no idea how he was able to shop, or if he was even swapping anything. They would just gain more junk and never actually lose any of it. They also did not have running water. Every weekend, when they went to the swappin' shop, they would take their weekly shower at a friend's house and fill a weekly ration of buckets to bring back home with them. If they had to poop at home, they would sit on one of those handicapped toilet seat frames with a bucket underneath and then clean it out with some of the water from one of their water buckets. I remember a specific time when the grandson had even told me that he didn't like using those bucket toilets, and on special occasions, he would just squat in the woods and cover it with leaves. Years down the road from the spanking incident, and after my grandpa had passed, Cal would refuse to even acknowledge my family. As with most weak asshole types, he blamed us for his problems and resented us, even though he was still living on my family's land. I had always had that weird vibe with him, but the spanking really sealed the deal. He somehow swapped and gained an old 1970s Toyota van that was probably the ugliest vehicle I had ever seen. There was something so ominous about seeing it drive past our house. The tension was palpable any time Cal was even remotely near me. I was plagued with so many nightmares of him one day revolting, marching to my house, and killing me in my sleep. Around this time, at odd hours of the night, we would see bright lights and hear the sounds of semi-trucks echoing from the creek. My family and I would look in their direction and wonder what they were doing.
What are they doing?
The next day, when we would drive past, there would be an entire semi-trailer parked near their home amongst all the other junk. For months, this would go on. Different trailers would be swapped out and taken away, sometimes a couple parked there at once. We had heard that Cal was just helping a friend store them sometimes, and that it was some sort of swap and shop deal. As my mom is a very kind woman and loves to help, she would try to go over and give the grandchildren stuff when Cal wasn't home. I remember going with her once and stepping into their living room. The entire trailer was full of boxes of cereal. Stacks and stacks, like a room-sized replica of the Rocky Mountains, made out of Cap'n Crunch.
Whoa.
These kids would actually have forts made out of cereal boxes. Tony the Tiger, Count Chocula, and the Trix Rabbit lined the walls like a trashy art installation about cereal. I know that they were much less fortunate than I was, and I would never choose to live a life of pooping in buckets. But I did leave there a tad jealous. My mother always limited me to one box of cereal, of my choice, a week. These kids probably had cereal every meal and had no limit to the variety at their disposal. This went on for a while, until one day, when I was about 14 years old, my brother and I got off the bus. As we slowly walked up the sidewalk towards our house, I noticed there was a yellow sign on our door. When I finally got close enough to read it, I saw that it was a sign from the sheriff's office. It had stated that they were conducting a search on our property. As I had ran in to call my mom's cell phone, I looked out the back door to see multiple police officers combing through our property.
Hey, look at this shit over here!
I felt immediately violated. They were going through all of the stuff by my Meemaw's house and all of our sheds around our home. No stone was left unturned. Like bees swarming around a picnic area trash can in the summer, it was an infestation of law enforcement. Being that we are very private people who live in the country, my dad rushed home and came to figure out what was going on. It turned out that Cal had made friends with a shady semi-truck driver who delivered for different companies. Before making his deliveries, he would stop by and unload an unnoticeable amount of product that they would both split and either keep or resell. Thousands of dollars of cereal and dog food, amongst other things, had been stolen in these cargo encounters. Cal was arrested and put in jail for being one half of this very tacky heist. Upon his release, my meemaw had finally told them that they could no longer stay on our land. They ended up abandoning the trailer with most of their junk and moved just a few miles away to a different trailer that someone let them stay in. Today, the little corner that used to house millions of boxes of stolen cereal and buckets full of a villain's poop is now just an overran patch of grass and trash. Ground zero for the pettiest crime to ever involve my family has been reduced to a memory in our minds and a scar on our hearts. I have no idea where Cal is today and what other illegal things he may have done during his time on my family's land. Looking back at it now, I can't imagine that drugs were not in some way involved in their lives. Perhaps he is dead now, and his evil spirit lives on in every box of cereal that we bring into our homes. So if you ever see a box of cereal mysteriously move on its own, say the name Cal 3 times to send him back to his shit bucket in the afterlife.
Oh my god. Oh my god, I'm choking. That might be the best ending line I've ever heard. Wow, so you have no idea where Cal is today?
I don't. He was an older man, so I imagine if he's still alive, he's probably very old. It was so weird because they would look at us like we were villains and just like, how dare you people look at us like this? And we're like, you're nasty and bad.
You're shitting in a bucket. Like,
right.
You have cereal forts. I mean, it sounds cool in theory, but once you know all the other information, it's just plain creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So they never had jobs that you knew of?
Never had jobs.
Wow.
He may have did some odd jobs, but he never had a full job.
I think being a schemer or a thief was his full-time job.
I would think so. There had to have been drugs involved or something. I don't know how you can raise 2 kids and both of you not really have jobs.
Or I don't understand how you can only take a weekly shower.
Oh, and those kids smell ripe.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
So are they still with them, the kids? Do you know that?
Well, the kids...
Were they older than you or younger?
They were like a year or 2 younger than me.
Okay. And you don't know where they are? Age.
I want to say that the daughter got married and she might have moved on up, but the grandson was a real troublemaker. He pulled a different petty crime on my family that may also come back in the story sometime.
Oh my God. You know what though? We all have those creepy, grimy, conniving family members. I mean, as much as we all like to act like, oh, everything's great, everyone has them.
Yeah.
Everyone. I don't care who you are. You have a relative who has done something.
For sure.
Wow. Wow. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me that he was your villain as a child.
Yeah.
He sounds like a real creep.
Yeah. And like I said, it was almost like the movie Us or something. He was down below looking up at us and just like, how dare you? You make us feel like shit because you're living this lavish lifestyle. And it's like, we're below average too.
We have running water, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you could have went out of your way and gotten that.
Yeah.
But they would look at us in such a way that I just always felt kind of guilty inside. Like, why am I doing this? Why am I living a great life while they have this awful life? And I literally did have dreams all the time. Because he lived down the field, maybe like 2 football fields distance away. And I would just have dreams where I would see him with a gun walking to my house to be like, I'm going to get my revenge on you people. And it happened so many times as a kid where I was like, this dude's going to kill me.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So I was so happy when he actually did get caught doing something and got arrested because he was just an old weird creep.
Yeah, that's really cool that your family has all that land, though.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. Like, I know, like, the farm life isn't for you, but owning land, that's like generational wealth, you know, throughout time, over years and everything. That's really cool. And you know me, I love a good farm.
Yeah. It's just a lot of pasture now, but
yeah.
It used to be when I was a kid, my grandpa actually, almost like hoarders, loved collecting cars and stuff. And so if a friend's car would break down or something, they'd be like, well, you can just come throw it on my land. And literally when I was a kid, I don't want to say half of it, but probably 30% of that pasture was a junkyard.
Wow.
Because we just had so many. I have to look and see if I can find her, if my dad has one, but they paid and got like an aerial picture of the land at one point, and you could just see lines and lines and lines of dead cars back there. So much weird stuff. Like, we would play in the middle of it, and we would have even big control buttons for like factories and stuff.
What?
I was like, how the hell did you get this? Who did you know that had this that just like wanted to throw it away? And you said, don't throw it away. Come put it on my land.
And did they do anything with any of it?
After my grandpa had been dead for a little bit, my meemaw had, she sold it all to like scrap.
Oh, okay.
So there were like big old trucks coming in that were just full of it and just...
I'm sure.
It's crazy, but now it's cleaned out.
They should have had the American Pickers come out there. What is that what they're called? The guys on the show? It seems like that area would have been a good place for them to look.
Yeah. I'm sure my dad could probably tell you so much stuff that was back there. He's like, I can't believe this is gone and this is gone. But yeah, so much. It was so wild.
Well... screw you, Cal, wherever you are.
Yeah, Cal, you old bastard.
And that was really cool that you brought up Count Chocula and all the cereals. That really brings me back.
I love the Count.
Oh, my gosh. So, my story this week is a story from the news that as soon as I saw this story, I knew that it was meant for me to write about.
Ooh, I like that.
I mean, this one... I don't know. I'll explain more at the end why I connected to it so much and why I loved it so much, but it was such a captivating story, and I had a lot of fun with this one. Okay, here we go. Perfectionism is a cruel and relentless urge to refuse anything but being absolutely perfect. We would all be lying to ourselves if we said we never had a run-in with this urge. Whether it be photoshopping out your third nipple that always seems to pop up in photos, or spending hours in the mirror meticulously removing every flake of dandruff from your scalp, we have all been there. So if perfectionism is such a common struggle, then what happens when you were raised in a world that revolved around being perfect? What if you were raised to be a beauty queen? Jennifer Susan Klein was born into a world with extremely high expectations. Some of her earliest memories were of her mother yelling at her to sit up straight while sitting on the potty.
You have terrible poop posture.
And her father demanding that she call him father instead of Dada.
That's father to you.
She was taught to be poised and collected, dead inside, yet pleasant to be around. This, of course, continued throughout Jennifer's childhood and into young adulthood. It only made sense that eventually she would join the pageant world. Pageants had always come naturally for Jennifer. She was a beautiful young woman who was trained from a young age to perform, entertain, and stun everyone with her flawless being. So when the 1988 Mrs. America pageant came around, Jennifer came prepared. Hairspray in one hand and a twirling baton in the other, she was a force to be reckoned with. She soared through the swimsuit competition, tantalized the judges during the talent portion, and wowed everyone by stating that she would sacrifice her own life if it would bring world peace. The audience adored her. The judges respected her. And all of the other contestants secretly despised her. Regardless of what others felt about her, no one was surprised when Jennifer was crowned Mrs. America. this was one of the best times of Jennifer's life. She was a married, successful beauty queen that finally felt like her childhood trauma amounted to something. But as her father reminded her at every family gathering, beauty eventually fades. To stay relevant, Jennifer continued to reinvent herself over the years. She hosted and modeled on a national shopping channel, and even debuted in a local rendition of The Real Housewives of the Twin Cities. But Jennifer quickly realized that she just wasn't getting the attention that she once had. The shopping channel was full of selling useless products to lonely old women. And only a few of her community members had even seen the premiere of her local reality show. Jennifer wondered if she was starting to lose touch. Sure, she was in her 50s now, but she was still hotter than most of the young gals in town. Maybe it was her wardrobe that needed a refresh, Jennifer thought. As she strutted upstairs to her walk-in closet, she paused once in the doorway. Jennifer looked around at her clothing and her accessories and let out an exasperated sigh. She needed to go shopping. Only problem was, she had already spent her monthly budget on personal items. As her judgmental parents' voices played on a loop in her mind,
"You could skip a few desserts, honey."
She closed her eyes. She would just need to be creative. Nothing could stop her from looking perfect and receiving the attention that she so desperately deserved. Jennifer sped in her car over to one of the many local Macy's stores, credit card in hand. She grabbed blouses, trousers, pencil skirts, and cocktail dresses. Anything and everything she could find to bring back her once perfect appearance. Hearing each item being scanned in by the Macy's employee brought Jennifer a sense of pride. That was until she saw that she had rung up over a $5,000 bill. Not wanting to risk having her ideal life questioned by the Macy's employee, Jennifer forced herself to swipe her card, along with giving a polite smile. Walking out of the store, arms full of bags, Jennifer was living large. But once she arrived home, she realized what a large amount of money she had just spent. She quickly ran back upstairs to her giant closet and began snatching up her favorite clothing items from last season. Like an evil surgeon with a vengeance, Jennifer began diligently removing the tags from her new clothing and reattaching them to her old clothing. She couldn't help but let out one of her winning pageant smiles as she looked at the work she had done.
Damn, I'm good.
Instead of returning her old clothes with the new tags to the Macy's she had purchased them from, she decided to return the clothing to two different Macy's stores across town. Jennifer received a refund of over $5,000, and the scheme was a success. Or so Jennifer thought. It turns out that her items were quickly noticed by employees. One of them giving a statement said that her items were dirty and showed signs of wear. In the end, Jennifer was let off with an easy sentencing of 2 years probation. But that didn't mean she wasn't suffering deeper consequences of her own. Her once friendly co-stars of The Real Housewives of the Twin Cities stopped inviting her to brunch, and her parents somehow found a way to be even more disappointed in her. Whether the takeaway is that you should only return gently used clothing to Macy's, or that our appearances are only a superficial glimpse into another's life, I think we can all learn something from this story. Beauty may fade, and clothing can go out of style, but petty criminal charges stay with you forever.
Petty is forever.
I had to do the story. So little backstory here of why I loved it so much. All throughout my childhood, my grandparents lived in Pratt, Kansas, which is just a smaller western Kansas town. But that was the place that they would hold the Miss Kansas pageant every year. Mm-hmm. And so it was a big deal that every single year, my mom, my grandma, and myself would all go to the Miss Kansas pageant. And sometimes I'd bring friends and we'd get all dressed up and we'd go and we'd sit in like the little bleacher seats and we would buy the Miss Kansas book and we'd look through all the contestants and we would rate their talent portion like a 1 to 5, however good we thought their talent was.
Everyone's a critic.
And we would always pick our favorites. And then in the local paper, they'd have the photographs from that night and the performers from that night. And then there'd be a parade with all the pageant contestants where they'd be on the back of the cars waving. So as much as people like to poke fun at pageant contestants, and so do I sometimes, I just have kind of like a soft spot for them. And I have so many good memories of going to those. But I just could not believe that someone who had a decent amount of notoriety after all of her success, I mean, she was on a nationally viewed shopping channel, would do that. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? And honestly, I want to know her technique for putting the tags back on. How did she do that?
If it's just the thing with the little, like the little T shape at the end where they just put the tag on it, the little piece of plastic,
oh, yeah.
They have little guns that you just kind of pinch on.
Oh, okay. But this story just brought me a lot of joy. I don't know. And obviously, all the stuff about her childhood, I gave it my own rendition. I don't know this woman's childhood, but she was on a local Real Housewives of the Twin Cities. It obviously did not become a hit. It was just on the local channel and everything. And I watched a video of it. And let me tell you this, I would maybe watch that one.
Really?
I love the Real Housewives show.
I thought you probably would actually.
Yeah, and anytime one of the Real Housewives have a scandal that happens, ooh, bring on the drama.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. But I just thought that was one of the most ridiculous crimes I've ever heard. Clearly, your clothes look worn, bro. Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't even pick out barely worn clothes.
And when did this take place?
I know she won Mrs. America in the 80s. This happened in 2017, it looks like.
Oh, I had never heard of this.
Yeah, and oh my God, I have to show you her mugshot real quick. She has pigtails in it, for God's sakes.
My Lord.
But like everyone has these little like side by side of her beauty headshot and then her mugshot. Mm-hmm. It's just so funny to me.
Wow.
Have you ever seen a beauty pageant, Trevin?
Live? No. I've seen bits and pieces of them on TV, I think, but I don't think I've ever.
I don't know. There's something so fascinating about them to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's really honestly corny and ridiculous and just dumb to judge someone based on their appearance when really no one has control over that except for like working out and, you know, all that stuff. But you don't get to choose if you're a freaking 10 out of 10 when you're born.
Right. Working out helps maintain it, but I mean, you're not going to turn a 1 into a 10 with just working out.
Exactly. Exactly. And you have to be talented and you have to answer questions. That's why I think there's so many funny question answers that go viral of beauty contestant pageants because mm-hmm. you have to be very well rounded to be able to do all of that well.
Yeah, or just so well rehearsed.
Right. That story brought me a little bit of joy. I mean, she didn't even really get in trouble. 2 years probation. There are so many articles about it. Mm-hmm. I found countless articles. So I wonder how she's doing today.
I bet her probation probably wasn't even that bad either.
Yeah. Oh, I doubt it. I freaking doubt it. Honestly, I'm sure the embarrassment of it hurt worse than the actual criminal charges of it all.
Probably. And honestly, it could have kickstarted her career back up a little bit.
Right.
I could see her going on Dancing with the Stars after getting arrested.
Right. She should have done something. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see if I can find her on Instagram or something.
Oh, God.
I won't tag her, but I do want to see what she's doing. And she has two first names, Jennifer Susan. Like, who has Susan as a middle name?
Yeah, I don't like that. Sorry to all the middle name Susan listeners out there.
If you're born with two first names in there, I guess you're kind of bound to be a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Or a serial killer. They always go by the middle name.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have any announcements to make this week other than keep reaching out to us. We have had some amazing guest readers coming on. We just did the Review Queens last week. I know we have a few more coming up. Still working on merch, still working on Patreon. I know we've been saying that, but I swear we are.
Yeah.
We really, really are over here, guys. We're doing our best. We know we will get this stuff out to you guys soon.
Amanda's got a very busy September, and I should be moving in. Maybe I'll be moved in by the time this episode comes out. I don't know. But once I'm moved in and I can get back on my normal life routine, I can juggle so much Patreon work, it won't even be funny.
Yeah.
Or I mean, hope it's funny.
I hope it's funny as well.
Yeah, it'll be entertaining, I hope. Wow, way to sell ourselves.
Yeah, way to sell it, Trevin. Oh my God. And also, we haven't had a really, really, really amazing review on Apple Podcasts in a while. I would love to get another review because we still have a 5-star rating, which is really quite impressive. But I just want more of them. Yeah. I want them to keep coming in. And I get it. I know a lot of our listeners are like, I'm an Android user. And I'm like, I get it, man. I am too.
If your Windows computer has iTunes on it, go through the iTunes store on your iTunes app on your Windows computer.
Yeah.
That's how I have to do it for all of our podcast friends.
Yep. Get on iTunes wherever you can and, yeah, do it that way. Or you can review us on Facebook as well.
Yeah, you could recommend us because once we get to a certain point, then our Facebook page will start getting stars.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But you have to have enough recommendations first.
Right. They changed that to that. Anyway, well, I hope everyone is doing well. I hope that your week is going excellent. And just remember that no matter the crime, big or small, in the end, we're all doomed.
Doomed.
Get a shoddy. Bye.
See ya.
I'm Beck.
I'm Lindy.
And we are the hosts of the new podcast, Murder,
Mischief,
and Mayhem.
Growing up in the Pacific Northwest, also known as the serial killer playground, where
5 in every 100,000 people are serial killers.
Beck and I couldn't help but be a little interested in the darker side of the human mind.
Mix that with our extremely dark sense of humor as a coping mechanism, and you get our podcast.
And we tend to go down some rabbit holes that maybe some people might avoid.
If you could call it that.
We give you every fact.
And every detail.
We give you all the tea.
And we keep it classy.
Come join us every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And let's get into some
murder,
mischief,
and mayhem.
Thank you
and good night.
Thank you for listening to Seriously Sinister.
If you have a true petty crime story to share, please email us at seriouslysinisterpodcast@gmail.com or send us a Facebook message.
If you would like to support our show, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.
Also, tell your friends about this podcast.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at seriouslysinisterpodcast.
And on Twitter at seriouslysinpod.
Shout out to Trevin for writing all of the original music you hear and for producing our show. Follow him and his music at Fiesta Maiden on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Facebook.
And credit to Miranda Lucas for our awesome logo. You can find her on Instagram at MirandaLucas26.
All stories are written by myself and Trevin, and all stories are based on actual, true petty crimes.